My story belongs on the front page next to a photograph the size of the St. Louis Cathedral. That's what the reporter told me. She said I should picture my name in hers in capital letters and imagine showing her editor in the whole city of New Orleans that girls can be the heroes of stories and write them too. But I know the truth. Newspapers only care about girls who are rich and pretty and blonde, especially when they're dead. The real story is one the paper would never print. The real story isn't about me or that dolled-up debutante either. It's about my best friend Marion, undisputed queen of the cloak and dagger, and definitely not a murderer, no matter what the cops in the papers said. It started on the last night of 1929 with a knock on a door. That night, my Aunt Cal had run off to Baton Rouge for a last-minute vaudeville engagement and left me in charge of her speakeasy, the cloak and dagger. In all the 4 years since my mother ditched me with her sister, Aunt Cal had never trusted anyone else with the club. So I thought something might be about to change for the better. Maybe I wouldn't be stuck mopping floors, bussing tables, and cooking Cal's books forever. Maybe if this night went well, she'd let me quit school early and run the place on weeknights. New Year's Eve is second only to Mardi Gras in the French Quarter, but Cal said I shouldn't expect any more than the usual amount of trouble. The beat cops were bribed extra, the hidey holes were stocked with double the hooch. Marion was getting beautiful in his dressing room, and while Frank the bouncer broke up a fight over a boy between two sailors, I was running the door. So when the girl knocked, I was the lucky one who slid back the slot in the club's front door. "Jitter sauce," she said confidently through the sandwich size opening. All I could see of her were long-lashed eyes and one bright curl plastered to the middle of her forehead. She wasn't a regular, but she was pretty and about my age, and, most important, she had the password. I lifted the latch and let her in. Right away, I regretted it. She swept inside the club, leading a conspicuously wealthy pack, all of the kids except her sweating in oversized raccoon fur coats. Even in dead winter, most nights in New Orleans produced no worse than a clammy chill, but the girl was the only one with the sense, or the vanity, to leave the fur at home. She wore a slinky dress covered with an angular pattern of gold beads and enough jewelry to fuel the fencing trade in the French Quarter for a month. A gold necklace with translucent green dragonfly wings spread across her collarbone, an emerald ring, and nickel-sized emerald earrings that sparked light under her helmet of silvery blonde curls. I tried not to roll my eyes as the uptowners stopped just inside the door and gaped at the scene before them, tugging their fur collars away from their necks. The sign hanging over our door said we were a soda shop, but everybody who made it this far knew the truth, including the cops we bribed to keep the feds off our backs and overlook some of the less than lawful things going on inside. My aunt's club was a risky joint to be seen in, for lots of reasons, but we still got our share of looky-loos, mostly kids my age or so, who came purely for the sensation of being somewhere scandalous once in their straight-laced lives. Oftentimes, folks like these wandered in, took one look at the boys dancing with boys, girls with girls, and wandered themselves right back out again. This bunch looked like they were about to do the same, but their blonde ringleader jabbed an elbow in her date's ribs, and he skittered forward like an agitated crab.